I think I actually just want to start calling you Big Pelf. Welcome to episode 50 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and a man who just keeps moving up in the world, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, Gleyber Torres enthusiast Mauricio Rubio, and someone who drifts closer and closer to his Twitter persona every day, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Congrats on this milestone Tino episode. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballperspectus.com, at thedynastyguru.com, and on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus. You can also find me at BP Wrigleyville. And you can find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, the Dynasty Guru, and Fox Sports /MLB, and you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in challenged dancer, Goldstein. Ben?
I can only imagine that would be true. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru and at BP Boston, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. And you can talk to us about your feelings and ask us questions by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So 50 episodes. It's about 46 more than I thought we would do.
48 more than we deserve.
That's true. That's true. We did deserve episode 2.
Did we, though? Did we earn episode 2?
Yeah, and then we should have been stopped. Okay, well, welcome back. This week we are going to talk about U25 Dynasty League players in the AL Central, which is absolutely as miserable as you think it is.
Can I quickly, sorry to interject here, but why did you do that?
Why did I do what?
The AL Central U25.
Craig and I enjoy agreeing to series before we think about the ramifications, because it requires less mental effort every time we have to write, but then we start writing it and we're like, oh, God. This was an awful idea, but we're already halfway through, so what are you going to do?
It's so utterly depressing. Like, I attended a wedding this weekend, and it was a good wedding, and it was joyous and fun, and this is, like, an absolute counterbalance to that.
Like the red wedding?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. This is also just sort of how I think about the AL Central, and everything is just, like, reaffirmed.
In general, or
yeah,
I mean, the AL Central is pretty.
Yeah, it strikes. I don't know. I think of it, you know, East Coast bias. I think of the AL Central as a boring division.
That might be the AL East this year, though.
Oh, this. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that, like, heuristically, that's where I go to when I think AL Central.
Wow, heuristically, yeah. big man.
You know it. All right, well, before we continue on with this very cheerful conversation about players in that division, let's start, as we always do, with some reader emails. And our first reader email of the week comes from David. David says, "Hey guys, first time, long time. I have a trade I'm trying to work through in a year one dynasty league. We can keep players in perpetuity." See, it's not just me using big words. 5x5 with total bases and OBP instead of homers and average, and quality starts instead of wins. I am very well off in pitching, both presently and in the future, but I severely lack in areas in the outfield. In this trade, I have my choice of Jock Peterson or Soler, and one of Alex Jackson, Jesse Winkler, or Schwarber. I would give up Carlos Rodon and Dexter Fowler. Is this a no-brainer? Who would you prefer out of those guys? Thanks, I love the podcast. Dave in South Korea, yet another country heard from. This is very exciting. So, Craig, tell us, would you be giving up Rodon and basically a throw-in in Fowler to get Peterson and Soler? Or Soler, I should say.
I think it, I mean, it depends who you're picking. I think there is a version of this deal that I do, and it's with the qualification that, like, he actually is accurate when he says, I'm extremely well off in pitching. If that's actually the case, I think the justification can be made to do a deal for either Peterson or Soler and Schwarber. He's the only one of the other trio of the of that trio of secondary pieces that I would say makes this deal possible. I think Peterson or Soler is a feasible first piece. I was about to say I would take Peterson, but I'm not really sure. I think I'd take Peterson. I think either of those guys is justifiable if you believe Soler is going to come around, which I do. And getting Schwarber as a second piece is a really nice value here, given what he's saying about his lineup. Brett, do you feel the same way, or?
Yeah, I do this trade for Peterson and Schwarber, but I do want to take a little step back. I don't think Dexter Fowler is just a throw-in.
I don't think he's a throw-in, but I think
Fowler's been pretty good this year in an OBP format. He's base.
I forgot it was OBP.
He's been pretty good at the top of that lineup. He scored 32 runs. He's pacing for well over 100, and you know, but pacing is whatever, it is what it is. But he's scored a lot of runs, and he gets extra base hits. So he wouldn't stop me from doing the deal, but it's something that needs to be at least considered. But in an OBP, Jock Peterson is a potential just stud in an OBP league, and Schwarber is the same. They're both just really high end offensive players in a format like this.
I also we don't know how big the league is.
This is true.
So also I think true. that kind of affects it, because Schwarber and Peterson could be studs in any size league, and even in an OBP league, Fowler, I could see him more as a depth piece in something that's like a 12 team league, whereas, you know, once you start getting deeper than that, he's obviously a solid player that you would probably start every week.
Yeah, like, you know, historically over the course of his career, Fowler's got a .365 on base percentage. This year he's a little bit down off of that, but he's already got 11 stolen bases, so. You know, I do still do this deal, but I think that people, you know, Brett, you're right. People do kind of gloss over what Fowler's done so far this year, and just, you know, what he's done over the course of his career.
Well, I intro'd the question by saying Fowler's a throw-in, which is where that comes from Brett, but I forgot it was an OBP league 2 seconds after reading it. So, quality analysis. All right, very well then. Our next question is from CC in Chicago. CC says, that's tough to say, gentlemen, please discuss your thought process when you consider dropping injured players in Dynasty formats. Specifically, I'm forced to consider dropping Drew Smyly, Homer Bailey, and or Adam Wainwright in my Keep Forever Dynasty League because I also own Tanaka and Cobb. It's been a fun year. Would you rather keep an injured player or a prospect? My league loves prospects, and it seems like even a young prospect such as Gleyber Torres, Brett Honeywell, or Gilbert Lara could be more marketable than these injured pitchers. It's hard to imagine throwing in the towel already as the defending champ currently in first place. God, humble brag. But when is it prudent to give in rather than give up talent for replacement-level waiver wire trash that may do as much harm as good? Thanks, CC in Chicago. That is some epically bad luck. That is impressive, because that's
a lot of lost arms.
That's a good pitching staff.
Yeah,
that's a very solid pitching staff, and now it is nothing because pitchers are awful. So Mao, can you speak a little bit to the overall theory behind this question? Would you be holding on to these pitchers? Would you be going for, you know, sort of 100 to 150 range prospects like the guys he mentions?
Well, CC he mentions in the section below this is a 12 team league, and I think in that type of format I'm a little bit more open to dropping these caliber of pitchers. I think when you're this situation, though, like you're just gonna have to drop some people. It's gonna hurt. You might not like it, but you're in a situation where you have to recover some innings and you have to get pitching stats. So, unless you have an unlimited injured reserve, which it completely doesn't sound like you do, you're just gonna have to start dropping some of these guys. I think that if you start to lose a couple of these pitchers and you're in a situation where you have to drop one of these guys, it'd probably be dropping Homer Bailey. And in that situation, I think that I'd probably be looking to pick up prospects up to like the 100 to 120 range, and then after that, I'm more likely to hold on to some of the pitches that I have. But Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm definitely in the hold on to the injured pitchers camp rather than go for the prospects camp. More because, it sucks to be shorthanded for a little while, but these pitchers are very good pitchers. If you're going to drop one, I think I'm with Mao, and I would drop Homer Bailey just because I think he's furthest away from returning, and I think he's just as much of a question mark as any one of these five from a performance standpoint when he does. But that said, I mean, Bailey is a guy who was, a borderline top 20, 25 starter, heading into last year. So these are high quality arms. The thing is that this is a league where there's 12 man minor league rosters, so there's 140 minor leaguers owned. There's always a Gleyber Torres or Brent Honeywell or Gilbert Lara to pick up, and you can pick them up now and hope that you can trade them for something. But these pitchers are going to be much more valuable before those prospects are, and you can just get whatever prospects are next and then trade those to supplement the pitchers that got healthy and are doing well. Greg?
Yeah, I hold guys perhaps longer than I should, but they're almost always worth holding on to in dynasty leagues, in my opinion. I might drop Homer Bailey because I never really bought into Homer Bailey, and I think that his injury is going to make it hard for him to return as anything even close to resembling what he was in 2013. That being said, I don't see any situation in which I would drop Drew Smyly. Wainwright, if you think his career is over, but any of the other four guys named, I don't see any situation in which you drop them. I mean, I would say I have, especially if you have bench, unless they're eating into your active lineup spots, dropping them for bench fodder just doesn't really make sense to me, because they're likely going to be better than that bench player is once they get back, and perhaps significantly so. And I understand you want to have depth going through the season, but that's why you have depth in the first place, and now you're playing your backups. And if those guys get hurt, you can drop them, but you're going to want to hold on to your stud arms or bats. So I just don't really see an argument for, especially for prospects, like Brett said, given the size of the league, there are always going to be guys available. And if you want to pick them up and spin them once these guys get healthy, then that's fine. Ben, do you have a differing opinion?
I do not. I would. Dexter Fowler is not a throwaway in this league either because it's OPS. So now it's my mission to make up for Dexter Fowler. Okay. Our next question is from Bobby, who says, please forgive me in advance and spare some of the shame for admitting that Oh, come on, Bobby. I can't read this. You're just setting me up to fail. Please forgive me in advance and spare some of the shame for admitting that I am in a couple of ESPN leagues. The worldwide leader has just gotten around to adding Hector Oliveira to the player pool this week. This is going to lead to a very interesting fab cycle in my 20-team OBP Dynasty League. How much would you spend out of a $100 budget to get him? $0 bids are allowed, so I imagine most of the teams will be bidding aggressively. I do have a fairly stacked infield, so getting Oliveira would be a purely value move and not a desperation move. Thanks. So, Brett, we turn to you for all things fab. What's your answer, given that Bobby doesn't really need Oliveira, and what would your answer be if you really did feel like you needed Oliveira, if those answers are different at all.
I will get to that. First, I want to I know there are a lot of guys that get added at really weird times on ESPN and Yahoo player pools, but Oliveira just signed his contract last week, so this one is not that weird. So you can poke fun at those systems for adding, you know, these prospects 3 years after we talk about them, but this isn't one of those cases. For Oliveira, I've been the high guy, I think, on Oliveira since he's been in the fantasy consciousness. I really think he can hit. He's not going to be a big power guy. He's not going to be a big speed guy, but I think he is someone who could potentially hit 300 at the major league level and, you know, hit 15-ish homers, maybe a touch more if he really controls his own well. But in this sort of league where $0 bids are allowed, I would definitely get aggressive. We are all in a separate league. I think I mentioned this on a previous episode where I think the first week of the season, Oliveira was put into waivers and I won the bidding on him for $67. And I think that's a pretty fair price. I would not be afraid to go up to, I wouldn't be afraid to go up to the, you know, $70 to $75 range if it's a type of league where there is a reasonably big minor league farm team, just because there's just not going to be a whole lot else out there. I'm trying to think of the big guys who were spent on in FAB and TDGX last year, because that's a 20 team league with $100 FAB and $0 bids. Matt Lindstrom, I think, went for $50 in FAB. I spent $30-something on Mike Fiers. It's not pretty. So when you think about it that way, just get aggressive and don't look back, regardless of where you have depth. Ben?
I'm not very good at FAB, so it's interesting to hear you sort of theorize like that. I don't even think I played in FAB leagues until 2 or 3 years ago. So I am someone who is fairly routinely beat on like moderate bids. You know, I'll frequently bid $16 on a pitcher I want or something like that, and I'll lose out, often by a significant margin. So I'm still really learning the intricacies of this myself. $67 on Oliveira sounds like a horrifying figure to me, but at the same time, you know, you're probably only going to get one big FAB guy like that a year anyway, so I think it makes sense. Craig, what can you enlighten us as to whether or not you think Oliveira is going to play this year for the Dodgers, since you are our resident Dodgers fan?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, obviously, we had the weird non-trade of Juan Uribe go down today. That was one of the weirder things I've ever seen, especially since Alberto Callaspo decided, like, nah, I'd rather stay on the Braves than go with a team that's definitely going to the playoffs.
But can we talk about that in a minute, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? I don't care. but it's a very weird thing. I do think he'll play because I do think that Uribe gets moved at some point, or possibly, I guess, Turner. The obvious move would be to cash in on a guy like Guerrero, but he has a weird thing in his contract that if he gets traded, he can declare free agency at the end of the season. So anyone trading for him isn't really going to give up very much because they're probably not going to have him for that long. So I do think he will play once he's ready. I was talking to someone today. I said, you know, optimistically, that's probably 3 weeks away at the lowest. And I think reasonably it's up to 2 months away. But I do think he plays at some point this season. I'll defer to Brett on the FAB. I would probably go pretty heavy whether I needed him or not, because if you're competing this year, Even if you're stacked, it just gives you options. You know, that lets you go out and trade Rendon or Walker or one of these other guys, or you could cash in on him and then go to and then trade him to someone who actually needs him. But, you know, you get the benefit of getting something back from that team. So, I mean, I think the move is to go for it. Like I said, I defer to Brett on how much.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake that people make in Fab, especially at the, you know, at the beginning when they're still learning the ropes of how bids go, is not being aggressive enough for the guy that looks like the best player to come in the pool. You don't want to get beat on that guy.
I just want to note that I bid $1 on Sean Tolleson like before this last period, and I lost because I was behind someone in the waiver wire, and I hate my life.
That's a cold feeling. It's a cold feeling.
Always bid $1 more than you think.
Two. Just go two.
Two. Just go two.
Always bid $50 more than you think you need. Only, you can only do that once.
And also, we should note, since we're going to talk about the Chiaspo thing, that trade literally...
No, I know. As Mao said it. Yeah.
As I was talking about it, Ken Rosenthal is like, the trade is back on.
But
so, he's listening to us right now.
But
so
Uribe...
he even bet the chance. And he corrected.
Oh, okay, cool.
All right. Awesome. So there's an even better chance Oliveira plays, assuming he gets in shape for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Mao, any Oliveira thoughts, or shall we wrap up this segment?
I guess I'll just say that to kind of piggyback on Craig's thought line there, in terms of going heavily on him, even though you don't necessarily need him, I don't think that my Fab bid would necessarily reflect my belief in Oliveira's talent, and I don't think that it necessarily should. You know, sometimes you just go and get that guy because he's equity or a commodity.
Yeah, there are times when that's appropriate, but you can also get burned pretty badly on that.
Yeah, you can. You can.
Can I ask the important question now?
Sure.
You may.
All right. This is from Brewers fan JP Breen. And he says, which current Major League Baseball player best represents each of you? Mao, do you want to go first?
I was in between two players, as usual. But I'm going to go with...
you've used that before.
I have. I'm going to go with Aaron Hicks. Should be better. Isn't.
That's so sad.
takes circuitous routes to get to where he's going.
Uh-huh. Circuitous, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Brett, who do you got?
I'm going to go with Matt Carpenter.
Oh, that's good.
Is it because of the facial hair?
Partially because of the facial hair. Partially because, you know, I feel like... It took me a little bit longer to get going, but once I got going, I was pretty solid. Nothing outrageous, but pretty solid, reliable.
Yeah. Hitters hit.
They do.
Hitters fucking hit. That's
reductive. Very reductive.
Ben, I've seen some suggestions for you. Where are you going with this?
I am Jed Jerko because I came onto the scene like pretty strong. I thought, and I think I thrived off the fact that I was young. Then had a down year last year, but people were still willing to give me the benefit of the doubt. And then this year...
And you got locked into that long-term deal.
Right, nice. And exactly. Yeah. And now this year people are like, oh no. No, that's the real him. He's just not very good.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Mike Pelfrey, especially this season, because you look at it and you're like, no, why? That's just not going to work. And then it's kind of working, but you know it's not going to last.
So the Twins, essentially, in a nutshell.
The Twins in a nutshell, but you know, like I could have said the same thing about Kyle Gibson, essentially, but he's like, he's young and, you know, there's like a chance, but Mike Pelfrey, there's just not.
So sad. This was, except for Brett, well, sad, this was so sad.
Real accurate though, like all the way around. Mao, I think you're a little hard on yourself.
Well, I went with Aaron Hicks for the funny, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I have a very good major league equivalent.
Well, I didn't say you were wrong. I said you were hard on yourself. All right, who is Enya's MLB equivalent?
Ronnie Cedeno.
Oh. Why, because it had one hit? Welcome back to episode 50 of Tino. I hope you used that break to determine which sad MLB player's existence most reflects your own. And speaking of sad MLB existences, we are now going to talk about U25 players in the AL Central. This is part of an ongoing series that Craig and I release bi-weekly on Baseball Prospectus because we're terrified of original thought. So Brett, here are the keys. Take them away and ask us questions.
I'm very tempted, instead of taking the keys and using them to ask you guys questions, just to take them and throw them in the river.
I'm totally fine with that.
The AL Central is, I would say fun, but it's really the opposite of fun. So we'll start with the players that actually are good. Ben, 10 words why you have Byron Buxton over Eric Hosmer. Go.
Hurts my heart, but can't ignore the upside, Byron Buxton.
Craig, 10 words, Hosmer over Buxton. Why?
Great hair, times 5.
That's 4 words.
Damn it. What? I meant to say, like, great hair 5 times in a row.
Gotcha.
That's 7 words.
Craig is not good at this game.
No.
I'm really, no, it's not. No, I don't.
Can we celebrate the fact that Craig and I never gave up on Hosmer? I think we should talk about that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Good job, Craig.
Thank you. Good job to you, Ben.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You've underrated him currently, but still.
Well, you know, I'm okay with that. I have his jersey, so I'm allowed to.
That's well, fair. I don't.
Let's talk a little bit more about Hosmer. What do each of you think his power ceiling is right now at this point in time? Not necessarily for this year, but for a reasonable peak season. Ben, what do you think that number is?
Reasonable peak. I think he could flirt with 30. I think more often than not, he'll be low to mid-20s.
Craig?
25. I mean, just if we're picking, like, you know, milestone numbers as opposed to like, yeah, I mean, it could be 27, but I don't think he'll get to 30.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take the under, but if you're... That's about as high as I can think of going for him.
Okay. Before we get to the pitchers, Craig, higher number, most home runs hit in a season over Miguel Sano's career versus most stolen bases in a season over Tim Anderson's career.
Oh, man. I'll take the stolen bases. It's kind of a cop-out, but I feel like it's easier to get to that stolen base number than it is to get to the home run number.
Yep.
Ben?
No, same answer. It's not really a reflection of their skill. It's just easier to put up a flashier stolen base number.
Although, I mean, now that this is completely off the top of my head, so I don't know if it's a really obvious answer, but are there more, you know, high, let's say 30-plus home run seasons than there are stolen base seasons, at least from like you get the 30 stolen base seasons from guys like Jared Dyson, but in, you know, out of regular players instead of, you know, kind of specialists or like everyday players.
Yeah, I think I think off the top of my head, they're relatively even.
Okay.
But at least over the last couple of years, they have been.
What's it like at the upper end of the talent spectrum, though? Like, if you're talking about an 80 power guy, usually you're getting to about, what, 50 home runs? Or if you're talking about what Anderson's speed is, which I think is a 70, you're talking about, what, 50 to 60 stolen bases? Less than that?
I would say less.
It really depends on the player and
how good.
It depends so much on the player, the organization, the instincts, all of that. I mean, you could have a 70 runner who steals 25 bases, or you could have a 70 runner who steals 60 bases. I mean, there's really no
right. So I think
there's no definitive answer on that.
So, like, I think under that scope, the question becomes a little bit more interesting, because it really, now we're talking about what you think Tim Anderson's stolen base ability is versus where you think Sano's in-game power is. So does that change your guys' answer at all? Or?
No, I mean, that's pretty much what we were answering. Right?
Yeah.
Well, the main reasoning was that it's easier to steal bases. So, like, I mean, I don't know. I was just wondering if that was going to change anything at all.
Well, like, I guess my thought is, like Tim Anderson has 16 out of 21 stolen bases right now. I would have to look up Sano, but I'm assuming he does not have 16 home runs to this point in the season. So, like, it's easier to rack up, you know, stolen bases in bunches than it is to hit home runs on the whole. Sano has 9 home runs at this point. I mean, it's obviously not a direct comparison, but I think it's, like I just said, it's easier to take the stolen bases in bunches than it is home runs. And so the likelihood that someone can put together, I guess I would say, like, the likelihood of a 40 home run season is higher. I mean, a 40 stolen base season is higher than a 40 home run season is okay. Just the simplest way to put it.
Yep. I agree with that.
Makes sense. So let's talk about some of the arms. It's the same 4 arms in each of your top 10s, but they're in reasonably different order. So Craig, you have Carlos Rodon as the top under 25 arm in the AL Central. Talk a little bit about what you see in Rodon now that makes you put him there, and you know, how quickly you think he can ascend to being, you know, the type of at least an SP2 type.
Yeah, I mean, I put him there kind of based on his ceiling, and so it's mostly projection. I think the biggest issue he has, and I'm not confident it's necessarily one he can resolve fully, is his command. But I do think he's a better control pitcher than the guy who's walked 18% of batters this year. A lot of pitchers, when they break into the big leagues, they don't necessarily attack hitters, and they tend to live on the corners and walk a lot of guys. And a lot of guys have been able to refine that and turn into dominant pitchers. There have obviously been a lot who haven't been able to do that. But when you're talking about Carlos Rodon, you're talking about a left-hander with an above-average fastball, potentially plus fastball, a slider that could, you know, when it's on, is a double-plus pitch and an elite kind of pitch and an elite bat-missing pitch and a usable changeup. And so that's someone who, as he figures out kind of what he's doing in the major leagues, is someone who's going to miss a ton of bats, and I think he can keep the walks to at least a number that won't kill him. And I think he can, I think he eventually will be able to keep the ball on the ground, or at least in the park, enough that the guys he puts on base generally won't come around on home runs in that sense. So, it's based on ceiling, and he's starting in the majors now. I don't think he's going to be this guy right now, but he'll give you something now, and then I think progress to get to that point where he's maybe a high-end SP2.
Sounds good. So, Ben, you have your Donovan Ventura ranked highest of this group of four. How much of Ventura's ranking is the fact that you potentially think that he can stay at this level of performance for an extended period of time, and how much is upside on top of what we've seen from him at the major league level?
A little of both. I don't expect him to take some sort of giant leap and become, you know, consistent SP1. I think he could put together a lot of seasons like the season he put together last year, just, you know, maybe with a tick higher strikeout rate and, you know, slightly better command as he sort of refines his stuff. I mean, I think of him as a okay number two fantasy starter, very good number three fantasy starter, but I'm comfortable that as long as he's healthy, he's going to stay there. Nothing about his early season struggles this year really concerned me that much.
All right. So let's go a little bit further down the list and talk about some guys who I think have lost some of their shine, but still have pretty reasonable spots on this list. Oswaldo Arcia has not had the greatest 2015 season so far. Ben, what do you have you lowered your expectations for him long term based on anything that you've seen this year, or do you think this is just a blip in the development of him?
Yeah, so I don't think I've made any sweeping conclusions this year because he's only had 65 at bats. You know, last year I was pleased by the power, and obviously I was disappointed by the lack of average. I always thought of him as someone who would be more of a, you know, 270, maybe even 280 hitter with 20 to 25 bombs, not a 230 hitter with 20 bombs. But I think there's a little bit of prospect fatigue with him. He's 24. He has time to figure this out. And, you know, the power plays. 14 homers in 2013. It's not that impressive, but it was in a little over half a season back when he was 22. 20 homers last year looks nice. So I'm hoping that, you know, prorated this season, I'm hoping we see something like 255 to 260 with around 20 home runs again. And I really do think that as he fully grows into his power and as he gets a little more selective at the plate, I do think we are going to see someone worthy of outfield three status. But yeah, I mean, certainly he's lost a little bit of the luster. I really wish the hit tool appeared a little better and the strikeouts make me nervous. So that's really why he hasn't, you know, based on his stats, you think he should be lower. Based on his upside, you might want him a touch higher. I erred on the side of having him high, but that's why he can't be in my top 10.
All right. Craig, sort of the opposite. Anthony Gose has actually been a pretty good fantasy outfielder so far this year. You have him inside the top 20. Do you think that he can be a startable outfielder in medium-sized mixed leagues for the foreseeable future, or do you think this performance level drops off enough to the point where he's more of a, you know, in and out guy?
I think he can be. I think he would need maybe not a BABIP to the tune that he has right now, which I think is like in the 430s, but, you know, I think he would probably need like a 370 plus BABIP to kind of sustain value over the long term. I don't think that's particularly likely, but he's someone who I think, you know, he's playing alongside Rajai Davis, and I don't think that type of role is necessarily in a fantasy context either is necessarily out of reach or even unlikely. He's just a guy who's really fast, and I think he will be on a lot of teams as a late round stolen base grab, and that I don't think, you know, I've always kind of liked Gose because I don't think he's a complete, like, slap hitter when it comes to, you know, comes to being at the plate. But I do, obviously, he's got some hit tool issues, and I don't think those are all of a sudden resolved because of his hot start to the season. But the case is basically that he's here now. I think he'll be useful over the long term, if not a starter. And the guys behind him are just not all that good.
Yeah. I by that, they don't really have a center fielder in that organization.
Yeah, I mean, that's – and Yoenis Cespedes is going to be a free agent. And so I think Davis might be a free agent next year too. So you're talking about – I mean, he's really their only outfielder going forward. Is that right?
That feels right.
Oh, and J.D. Martinez.
Yes, and Tyler Collins.
Right, so – and J.D. Martinez.
Can't forget Tyler Collins.
Nope. Never forget Tyler Collins. All right, what, one more question, because the bottom of this list is super depressing. What are...
Only the bottom? I would say the majority.
Yeah, well, that's only mildly depressing, the middle of it. If you had to put a percentage chance on Brandon Finnegan being a starting pitcher in 2018, what percentage chance would you give it, Ben?
Oh, that is a really good question. I will go 25%.
Craig?
35%. I mean, I'm more hopeful than I am optimistic, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
I'm wish casting. I don't know that it'll kind of come to be, but I hope it does.
All right. That's my suite of questions. So Mal, if you have any from here, feel free.
This will be very, very quick, because anytime Jose Iglesias makes a list for fantasy reasons, it's a bad list.
Both lists.
Yes. So, Craig, in how many other divisions would Alex Meyer be a top 30 U25 guy?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of complicated in that he was just moved to the bullpen. And, I've talked at length before about my disdain for relief prospects. So, I mean, I would say anywhere – I ranked him 29th here. So, and this is going to be the weakest of the divisions, I would assume. So I'm going to say none. But if he was there as a starter – you know, I think he'd rank in most of them towards the back. And even as a reliever, I would have to acknowledge that his impact, you know, he could be an elite closer in terms of fantasy, in terms of saves and strikeouts. But I'm just not willing to gamble on relief futures. I prefer to deal in the present in that sense. So, you know, that's the caveat. But the answer would probably, for me, would be none. But I would understand it.
All right. Very good. Ben, for you, what is Raul Mondesi's, carrying fantasy stat?
The fact that he plays shortstop. It's not a stat. I mean, I think he's someone who's projected to... It's really tough to look at his minor league numbers and think of him as someone who could have even a decent hit tool. But I think he could have... I think his hit tool could not be so bad as to limit the utility of his speed, which obviously is the carrying tool for him, for us right now. So I think we could eventually come to look at him, I don't know, as a better Eric Ibar or something. I know it's not super exciting, but I think it's easy to lose sight of how talented he is because he's being pushed so insanely aggressively. But if he's someone who can hit, you know, around 260 or 270, I could easily see him routinely stealing between 20 and 30 bases a season.
Craig, for you, for fantasy purposes, how good can Francisco Mejia be?
I mean, I think he can probably be a top five type catcher if everything works out. I think the more realistic expectation is something in the top 10. So a starter in fantasy, you know, and even in shallow leagues, but probably not towards the top of that. You know, he can be an above-average hit, above-average power. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, like 20-plus home runs, but I think he can be, you know, maybe a 280, 15 home run catcher, and that's pretty usable. And he's a decent athlete, so, you know, you might get a couple stolen bases here or there. But, yeah, that's what I'll go with.
Excellent. Ben, next year, does Brad Zimmer break the top 10 of this list?
Craig and I were just speaking about this before the podcast. I didn't realize how good he had been this year. If he keeps it up, he's gonna have to be flirting with that line. I think that's an interesting benchmark, and my gut says he will have just missed it, but it's a way closer than I thought it would be, you know, even 2 months ago.
All right, cool. And this last question is for the both of you, and we'll start with Craig. You know, in preferably in haiku version, in fashion, but if you can't,
nope,
I understand.
I can't do that. I can't do that.
Can you say nice things about Abisail Garcia?
I hope he doesn't get hurt, because he's actually pretty good.
Ben?
Give me a sec, I'm writing out a haiku.
I really like Garcia. I've said it. I liked him at the time of the trade. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to buy Ben some time here.
No, it's I am actually looking at the jersey Ben got me.
He makes Mao happy. In turn, that makes me happy. Please stay healthy, dude.
That's beautiful, actually. I might get that tattooed.
But I think you should.
that's it for me.
So I have a second Abisail Garcia jersey. We need to have some sort of contest for this.
Well, we can give it away to the winner of the Tino hacking mask.
That's true.
Which we have a standings update on.
Was that a transition? That was a professional transition, my friend.
Well, you know, I'm just out here trying to be Mike Pelfrey of this podcast, you know.
Very workmanlike performance from you tonight, I gotta say.
Thank you. Yeoman's work.
Yeah, quality start, not much more than that, but you kept your team in the game.
Thank you.
No problem.
I'm gonna hit the showers and let someone else take over.
I think I actually just want to start calling you Big Pelf. It's so perfect.
Oh, man.
Any current news for us to discuss? I don't really think anything huge has happened in these last 2 weeks.
No, I don't think so either.
Well, we've had a couple of call ups, but right?
Yeah.
Did we? Ruzny,
Michael
Ruzny,
Franco.
That's pretty good.
Right?
Franco, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Franco. Yep. Sandy Leone, base hit. Can't make it up. God bless America.
I feel like there's a lot of De Leones running around the baseball consciousness right now.
Oh, we just got a very important last minute. This is a great note to go out on. Very important Twitter question. If Enya were a foot-long sandwich, what sandwich would Enya be?
Oh, man.
Tuna melt. I'm not going to explain it.
Oh.
Oh.
Why would you do that?
I don't.
Wow.
I want Brett's disappointed Mao to be my ringtone.
That's amazing.
You'd never pick up your phone.
No, I would just listen to it over and over again. I don't know. Brett, do you have an answer here?
I think I would go with Turkey Club.
Safe
turkey,
choice.
Safe, pretty simple, hard to mess up, classic.
I will go with the sweet onion chicken teriyaki because it's Mike Trout's choice of sub, and I want only the best for it.
Are you you gonna shill for tops in a second here as well?
The night's young.
I don't know if I can't. I don't think I can.
I called up. I called up a menu of Subway subs. By the way, so look at this.
I would say, God damn, I don't know. I would say pastrami with mustard because it's, you know, you might be enticed, but the odds are it's not gonna. You don't want it for a foot long, really. You don't. It's too much. It's too much of the same flavor. You're not gonna.
Yeah,
you're gonna regret it by the fourth bite, I think.
Yeah. I really. Someone from Enya's like group of people has to catch on to this at some point. I think we're responsible for 40% of all Enya references on the air now.
I I think it's higher.
That might be selling us short.
If we get contacted by Enya's people, I say we end the podcast.
Welcome back to episode 50 of There Is No Offseason. As always, let's send you out with a little housekeeping. If you're into daily fantasy sports, feel free to challenge any of the members of Tino on our daily DraftKings lineup. It's going pretty well so far. I think we've done a decent job finishing in the money. Not sure any one of us has actually finished first yet, but we'll keep plugging away at that. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We've had a bunch of good reviews lately, but the more the merrier. And getting to 100 before the season is over is a nice little goal for us. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Facebook at Tino Podcast. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Kurt Demeanor Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
Could you imagine if Kurt Demeanor was actually someone's name?
Sounds like a Clue guy.
It does. Mm-hmm.